Yeah, I do.
All right. Across the Kidron Valley, down through, and then pictures of that. We looked at some of these. I took out a couple of them that we had last time. Just the pictures of the olive trees in the Garden of Gethsemane that we have here. I mean, that's the apostles there to pray, told them to pray. Took Peter, James, and John with him a little further. Timing, we think, probably is about midnight by now. Tall time, all the things that have happened go on. But I think the scholars that I read, what they come up with. This is the one we looked at so much. He began now to be very troubled and sorrowful, beginning to weigh on him now. It's a matter of minutes, hours at most, before Judas shows up. And so he's pleading, pray, let's just pass from me, if it's possible, but your will be done, not mine. Goes back, finds him asleep, goes back a second time, ask again. Angel comes, sweat, as it were, blood coming from him. Again, your will be done. Then we talked about this verse, this word vehement, and what it means. Other translations use the word loud. I was asking Wayne Partain today what this word is in Spanish and how they use it there. And it's a persistent, loud plead beyond everything. It's like Luke 18, the woman pleading with the judge, you know, went back and back. The persistence type thing there. It's nothing quiet about it. In fact, Wayne went on to say it's like me right now in my prayers, because he's done with ophthalmologists. He's got macular degeneration. Of course, he's 94, 95. And now he said there's blood in his eye. The doctor told him the other day, if I go wide, he said, I can still preach, but I can't do the YouTube work, the sermon work, stuff I'm doing. So he said, I'm just loudly begging, type, for pleading that it can stop. And so he said that was his comparison to what this is like here. It's not a quite easy, quiet prayer. And so we talked about that quite a bit last time. Prayed the third time, and then the Judas is there with this large group, multitude type thing. Roman officer, temple guards, etc. And Jesus says, yeah, I am he. And again, who you seek? Again, I am he, let the others go. Judas does the kiss to betray him. And you have to put all the different accounts together to get kind of a flow here. Different ones, different. Peter cuts a man's ear off, and we talked about this a little bit. You know, how would you feel if you were there to arrest him? And all of a sudden he takes his bleeding ear and just puts it back in the man's head like nothing happened. I mean, it's got to be an impression some way. So he goes, talk about he gave his life, said he laid it down, no one takes it from me. To Annas, who have this political situation here with the high priest now. Annas was the high priest, and now it's Caiaphas. Questions there, sent him on to the Sanhedrin and Caiaphas. And they couldn't find witnesses that would agree to him on what they did. So finally, the high priest puts him under oath and says, are you the Son of God? Under oath. And he says, I am. And of course, they got in now for blasphemy in their minds. And so they're ready to kill him. The abuse begins. Then we talk through Peter's denial. Three times he denied him. And then Megan will get through here is one more slide there. He just denied it. When you just said you wouldn't do it. In fact, all of them said, we'll never do it. Peter did. I just see Jesus' eyes tight when he looked. So they do again, somewhere around daybreak, bring him back for the trial again, ask him, and he says he is, and now they're ready. So that's kind of where we got to last time. I want to start tonight, I hate to do this, with a reading, and it's about the priesthood, and it's going to tie right into what we're talking about with this stuff tonight. It mentions Herod in here, and it's not Herod Antipas that we'll talk about later tonight. This is going back to the times of Herod the Great. But it's going to apply, the same thing is, to the time frame now. It says in the first century of Palestine, there was no separation between church and state. The priests at the temple in Jerusalem not only officiated over religious life of the Jews, they were also their rulers and their judges in the civil side. Herod, who himself was a pawn of Rome, had his own pawns installed in the Jewish priesthood. By the first century, the election of the high priest was more political than religious. The Romans wanted the priesthood to support their occupation, with them being in Judea, and the Herods made sure that their desire was carried out. However, it would be unfair to categorize all the priesthood as sympathetic to Rome. Some did support rebellion against Rome, but those at the highest levels were undoubtedly in Rome's back pocket, the priesthood. We see evidence of this loyalty to and fear of the Romans in the Gospels. Then many of the Jews had come to Mary, seeing the things Jesus did, believed in him. Some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them things Jesus did. The Pharisees and chief priests gathered a council together. What shall we do if this man works many signs? If we let him alone and believe in him, the Romans will come and take away our part. So they were fearful of the Romans and what they would do. Josephus records that the priesthood went as far as to authorize a daily sacrifice for Caesar in the temple. Somebody read that, I think. It was a source of continual angst for the Jews. In the final Roman-Jewish conflict, the cessation of the daily sacrifice for Caesar in the temple was considered an act of war and helped lead to the destruction of Jerusalem. The priesthood lived in luxury well above and beyond that of the average man. They supported their lavish lifestyles with a temple tax, which every Jew was required to pay. Richard Horsley, in his book, The Message and the Kingdom, describes what archaeologists have discovered about the living conditions of the priesthood. Impressive archaeological remains in the Jerusalem residence shows how elegant their lifestyle had become. Spacious mansions, quote, the archaeologists uncovered in the 1970s, get a glimpse of the lavish life in mosaic floored reception rooms, dining rooms, elaborate painted carved stucco and decorations. And it goes on about the livelihood of the priest compared to the average man. And they supported that based on the taxes, the temple tax and other taxes that Rome and Herod imposed on the people. So the people were living barely in poverty while the priesthood was a whole different class, is what this whole thing is all about. Priesthood was undoubtedly jealous of Jesus' popularity. Their main motivation for seeking to kill Jesus was fear. When a new king came to power, he would set his version of the priesthood in place. They would lose their spots. All this talk of Jesus becoming the new king undoubtedly unnerved the priests in Jerusalem. If Jesus came to power, they thought they would be out of a job or killed, and the Romans did not take too kindly to unauthorized kings. In their opinion, Jesus was inviting the wrath of Rome. They did not understand that Jesus' kingdom was not of this world, and his priests were not according to flesh and blood. So that's part of why the priests are so anxious to get rid of Jesus. It's their position that their Romans got them in now, their livelihood, and then their fear if Jesus were to become king, like they don't know what kind of king he's going to be, but if he were to become king, this is going to upset the balance in Rome, and they'll be out of a job and maybe dead, and Rome will be down their throats, etc. So it kind of gives the picture of what their motive is. So we got three kind of harsh things to talk about tonight. First is Judas. Judas realizes that what he has done betrayed innocent blood. He goes back to the Jewish leaders and talks to them about it. Well, they don't care. You know, they got what they wanted. They got Jesus arrested. And so they don't care about his remorse. So he throws the money down there and gives it back to them. And then, of course, they don't know what to do with it because they say it's blood money. We can't put it back in the treasury. So they go out and buy this potter's field, a place to bury strangers. We don't think about that much because we think if somebody died here, we ship the body back to where it worked out. Somebody died, you've got to bury them. And so they buy this place to bury them. It's talked about in Acts chapter 1, these verses here. They used this money and bought this field and gory part of how Judas died from Acts chapter 1 when he hanged himself, fell down, insides come out. So that's just a little quickie. Did you find it? Okay. Quickie about Judas. So that's the first thing comes up in his story tonight. Judas has betrayed Jesus and now realizes it was wrong. If the innocent goes back to the priest, they don't care. They got what they want. He throws the money down. They got nothing to do with it. So they buy this field to bury a stranger. Judas goes out and hangs himself. We'll talk about that just a little bit at the end. So let's turn our attention to Pilate for a few minutes. I don't have a note where I got this saying here. I usually footnote in my notes where they came from, but this quote says, Pontius Pilate has been enshrined forever in what this man called the Coward's Hall of Shame. He knew the charges against Jesus were void of substance. Because of his spineless politicism, he delivered the Son of God over to rebellion the Jews for crucifixion. I don't know about that word spineless in there. I think Pilate was anything but spineless. We'll see that coming in the next two or three slides here when we talk about him. But the Hall of Shame probably is true. In John, end of 18, in Bar 19, I think it's four times he says there's no fault. We'll talk about those as we get through here, whether it's found no fault in it, but he'd be killed in it. Both Philo and Josephus paint a very stark portrait of the Roman ruler. Pilate's characterized as oppressive, greedy, stubborn, and cruel, probably to say the least on that word. Philo specifically categorizes his ability to be bribed, the ability to bribe money. His violence, his thefts, his assaults, his abusive behavior, his frequent executions of untried prisoners, his endless savage ferocity. Some claim Philo was exaggerated, but still, Pilate was a pain. They hated him. So they take Jesus then. That word is used in various parts, different parts of the Gospels and in different translations with different words. his house and the palace are all really referring according to this. It's be very, very early Friday morning, the supper on garden, prayers, betrayal, Annas, Caiaphas, during the night, back at daybreak, and now they've had that daybreak meeting, and now they go taking to Pilate. The sequence. But this is feast time. You know, Thursday night, Jesus was eating the Passover feast. So they can't afford to become unclean, ceremonially unclean, and they can't eat the Passover. So they won't go in Pilate's house, the praetorium. Pilate comes out to them because of their ritualistic uncleanness they would have with them. So here's the first thing. What's the prisoner done? What's a good political answer? Well, if you weren't a bad man, we wouldn't have brought him to you, right? The answer to the question? No. So it's just, you see the whole thing coming down here to, well, he's guilty of blasphemy. But Pilate says, I don't care. No, that's what they got him for on the Jewish law, but they got to find something for Pilate to get it with. Well, if he weren't a bad man, if he weren't an evildoer, he wouldn't have brought him to you. So Pilate says, well, you take him and deal with him according to your law. If it's just something like that, you handle it. Well, that's not what they want, because we can't put him in legally. Rome had to get involved with it. So they begin to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. We'll touch on the paying taxes to Caesar later at the end here. Certainly did not do that. But this king part, that's why I read that thing earlier. The king claiming to be a king, they're trying to get the Romans to get upset because of that, because if he is claiming to be a king, well, Pilate, what are you going to be when he gets to be the king? So yeah, they start playing this thing with him with that. So he asked Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? He says, are you asking me because you really want to know? Or have you just heard somebody say that about me? He said, my kingdom is all this world. Of course, Pilate couldn't have that. He had no idea what he's trying to say, what he's trying to tell it. So did you are a king? Yes, that's why I came to the world. So Pilate, this is, doesn't mean anything to him. He's not an insurrectionist or a murderer like Barabbas will in a minute. So he goes back to Jesus and says, I don't find anything. What are you charging this man with? I don't find anything that he's done here. So when they're talking back to Pilate, then they happen to mention he's from Galilee. Well, Pilate sees a way out here. He's going to see several ways out as he goes through here. Here's one. He's from Galilee. Oh, Herod's in town. It's to be Herod Antipas, because he is ruler of Galilee, where Pilate has Judea. So he sends him to Herod from Galilee. Let Herod take care of this. So he sent him to Herod. Well, Herod liked the idea because he'd been wanting to see Jesus. He'd heard about him, no doubt. So he wants to see him do a miracle. Jesus doesn't respond to Herod's questions at all. They start mocking him, making fun of him. And he sends it back to Pilate. And it's stated there that Herod and Pilate had been enemies up to this time, and now with this event, they became friends. So Pilate goes back out and tells the Jews again, neither me nor Herod can find anything that he's done wrong. We don't find anything wrong with him. So Pilate said, okay, I will scourge him. Remember we had earlier, he would scourge uncondemned or untried prisoners, nothing to him. So I'll scourge him and release him. Now, we'll get to the scourging here in a minute. That ain't something easy, tough, light work. But here's another thing. Pilate's wife steps in. I've had bad dreams about this guy. Don't have anything to do with it. So now he's not only found nothing wrong with him, he's got his wife saying, I've had nightmares about him. Don't get involved with him. Herod found nothing wrong with him. I can find nothing wrong with him. Yet, even though he found no fault, he was willing to scourge him just to get the Jews happy and get this thing over with out of the way. It didn't bother him. He's going to beat him really almost literally to death. Get out of my way. Scourge him. So another way out, he said, okay, at the feast every year, he releases a prisoner to him. Would you like me to release Jesus to you? Well, I normally do. Nope. We want Barabbas. Barabbas is a murderer, an insurrectionist, stirs up problems. Excuse me. But they want him instead of the meek, mild-mannered Jesus. Compare the two. But what I do with Jesus then? Crucify him. And now you get the mob mentality coming as they got all the people. You just hear them chanting, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. So we got Judas' death. We got the ruthless Pilate. He has approached this whole trial with no fault, no fault, no fault. But I'm going to beat him in. I'll scourge him. So let's talk about scourging or flogging. Legality preliminary to every Roman execution. So before you kill somebody on the cross, you're going to beat them almost to the point of death. I might say whip them instead of beating. It's not a beating, it's a whipping type thing. Only women and Roman senators and soldiers, unless they're guilty of desertion, were exempt from crucifixion, from flogging. The usual instrument was a short whip, flagellum, with several single or braided leather thongs of variable lengths, with small iron balls or sharp pieces of sheep bone tied into the leather, like this. So you see the handle and the short pieces. This is really a better picture with the bone pieces at the end there. So you just take this little short thing with these leather things, And as you, and I'll get to a couple of pictures. This is a more modern day looking one here, somebody made. But then here's a man tied to a post, bent over, stripped, and you got one on each side with these short handled little whips with the bones, and you just see them as they hit it, you jerk. And it hits, whips, and just rips flesh down to the bone. Occasionally stays reused. Man was stripped of his clothing, hands were tied in an upright post, back, buttocks, legs were flogged either by two soldiers like we saw here, or by one who would hit this way a while and go to the side, hit back and forth. The severity of it depended on which side of the bed the guy got up on that morning. It tended to weaken the victim to a state just short of death or collapse. I'm going to beat you almost, or whip you almost to death, and rip your flesh with these bones and steel balls and rip it apart. That's the scourge of the soldiers taunted their victim. This is what Jesus. Now, I think it's this next slide that if you get queasy, you might want to cover your eyes up. It's kind of, it ain't pretty. Give you a fair warning. This is the back, man, that healed after being scourged. See how deep and bad he was cut up. Okay, what happened to Jesus after the scourging? Keep in mind what we just said about scourging. It's to the point of collapse or death. Your back, buttocks, legs, and ripped, they're ripped apart, shredded meat. But when I read often down literally to the bones, where the bones are. So now they put the purple robe on him and a crown of thorns. The reed in his hand, start slapping him, saying, "Who hit you?" Mocking, more torture. So, just thinking about it. You ever thought about what's running through his mind right now? In mind, he had prayed that it might not happen if it's God's will. Why? That the mental torture is going through in the garden, because he did not want to go through. His human side did not want to go through this. Yeah. Now he said, "I could have called 12 legions of angels." So what's going through his mind right now is what his father sent him here to do. And the obedience, even to the point of this, all this torture. Now, here's the other half. I sent my own son that. So Jesus brings him back out. I mean, Pilate brings him back out and says, "Behold the man. Look at him." And you can just imagine what kind of shape he's. So now what you want to do with him? I beat him to the point of death. I whipped, I keep using the word beat. Whip's a better word. Whipped him to the point of death. Mocked and made fun of. He's not a king. What's he going to do with him? Keep in mind what he's found nothing to charge him with. Herod didn't find anything to charge him with. His wife said, "Don't get involved." So, no guilt. High priest, chief priest have got the crowd now to the point where that's the only satisfaction. He claims to be the Son of God. Now watch this. You're not Caesar's friend if you release him because he claims to be a king. We have no king but Caesar. Oh, what you will say in a spot where you want it done. Pilate says, "I'm innocent." He washes his hands. The Jews don't care. His blood be on us and our children. Pilate, you don't have to be responsible for it. We'll take all the blame for it. So he releases Barabbas and sends you. All right, before we start, back in some thoughts here. Comments. I'm not trying to over-dramatize it. I just want to see what's going on. Oh, yeah. Good point. I'm about to win, right? I'm about to win. Yeah, good point. Okay, let's go back to Judas in our mind for just a minute. And could we be like Judas? Hebrews 10:28 says, "Anyone who rejects Moses' law, who rejected Moses' law, died without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses." I thought, how much more punishment do you suppose will be thought, will he be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of God underfoot and counted the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified a common thing and insulted the Spirit of grace? Can we do that? We can count the covenant sanctified us a common thing, trample underfoot the Son of Man, Son of God. So can we be like you? I think this is, yeah, we can. We don't watch it. The next thing is then, well, one more point and I'll go back to the one I was going to finish. They got out there in the auditorium, it's 1 John. I think the readings Norm put out maybe today was that, "No, I do not love the world." But the one I had in mind was, where sin, when we're drawn away, enticed, the temptation comes. Jesus told the disciples, "Pray that you not go into temptation." The devil put this in Judas' heart, John 13, at the Passover Supper. He had already entered his heart. Did Judas have a choice? He did. But he didn't get an IRC. He didn't get an IRC. That's the point I started to get the wrong way. Wrong. Two or three people. This is not the way. There's always a way out. Better than this. Forbidden to pay taxes to Caesar. What did he do? Bring me a denarius, bring me a coin. What did he tell him? Whose image is on it? Caesar's. Therefore, render to Caesar's what? Caesar's. And to God, what's God? Pay your taxes to Caesar. Pay your taxes to Caesar. He didn't tell him not to pay taxes. He told him to pay taxes to Caesar. And then it's Pilate. "I'm innocent of the blood of this just man." Really? Really? Innocent? You got him whipped to this point of death? And now you're going to release it to be crucified when you're the one that's got to make the decision? If he said no, it'd be no. And then this thing, the Jews, his blood be on us and our children? All right. If you get over to Acts chapter 5, after the day of Pentecost, disciples start teaching about Jesus. And you kill him, and God raises him from the dead. Then the captain went with the officers and brought them, the apostles, without violence, for they feared the people, lest they should be stoned. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council. And the high priest asked them, saying, do we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? And look, you filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us. You killed him. God raised him up. But here, it's okay. We'll take credit for it. Let his blood avail us and our children. But now the other side of it, they said, no, you're trying to bring this man's blood on us. Well, what did you say 60 days ago, whatever time frame it was? Now you're out. I think that's the last one. So, not an easy one, I don't think, to teach. I don't know how you're going to handle it. It's Judas, that's not pretty if you get into it very much. Pilate is ruthless. Scourging is awful. The lies they told, the headlong thing, we're going to do it no matter what. The whole attitude, whatever it takes to get it accomplished, we're going to do it. Even the blood of us and our children, I mean, we're going to pass it on to them. Okay.